and welcome to the Headache Doctor podcast. My name is Dr. Taves, and it's my mission to empower everyone with headaches and migraines to break free from a life of fear and dependence and thrive in everything you do. In this episode of the podcast, we are going to do a Google search of headache and migraine treatment, and then I am going to talk through all of the different options that are on the internet. So we're going to look at what the internet says about headaches and migraines and talk about that. Is it helpful? Should you listen to the internet? Are there other options than what the internet will give you? Or what maybe are some legitimate things that you should do that we can pull from the internet? We're going to look at what the Mayo Clinic says. The Mayo Clinic does a great job of providing value to those searching for different diagnoses. And so migraine is one of those that the Mayo Clinic has a particular influence in. And I actually went to the Mayo Clinic. And so I kind of know the ins and outs of the Mayo Clinic, and it's a wonderful institution. But we're going to talk about what they suggest when it comes to migraines. We're also going to look at WebMD. WebMD is one of the most prominent, influential sources on the internet when it comes to making a self-diagnosis, which is probably not encouraged, or finding at-home remedies, looking at what sort of in layman's terms the research says, that sort of stuff. So we're going to look at WebMD. But first, let me just start out by, I just typed in migraine treatment on Google, and I want to talk a little bit about what I'm seeing on this homepage. So first, there are four ads. The first one is a prescription treatment website. And I clicked on that, and basically it is a website for Botox. So Botox has its own website, I guess, and they are promoting the Botox type treatment. And of course, there's the disclaimers on the bottom of the page that talk about, kind of the risk factors involved with Botox. But this is interesting to me because one of the things that I think needs to be evaluated, reevaluated, or potentially changed in our sort of Western model of medicine is you will see advertisements for medication. Now, it's kind of an interesting thing, and we talked about this in physical therapy school as well, but in the healthcare process, when you're pushing evidence-based practice, which is basically saying that the evidence needs to drive the way the clinician practices, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have a pharmaceutical company advertise their product. Because if evidence is driving our healthcare choices or decisions, then the access to that prescription medication should be through the healthcare provider, who's then going to the evidence and making that recommendation or prescription based off of what the evidence says. So when there's an advertisement for a specific medication, basically what that pharmaceutical company is doing, in this case Botox, is saying that we want to influence you, the consumer, those with a headache or migraine, so that you will then go to your doctor, go to your provider, and ask specifically for Botox. And now, in some regard, that's, I could say that's okay because they truly believe in their product, they believe it works, and obviously they're disclosing that there's risks involved. But when you take a step back and understand the influence that these pharmaceutical companies have when they're spending millions of dollars in their advertising budgets to influence the way you think and view your migraine, what happens and what we've seen is this sort of slow drip over time is not only do you, the consumer, start to think of your headaches and migraines as this sort of chemical process, medication's the only option, and I just have to go to my provider who then will prescribe. They're kind of that gateway into the medication, which I see this ad for all the time. So the provider becomes less of a consultant or a directing care, and they're just kind of your gateway into getting whatever it was during the Super Bowl where the people were happy and running around in the field because they had this prescription medication. So it's influencing the way the consumer thinks, the way you, the patient, thinks, and it's also influencing the way the provider thinks as well. And there's kind of the ins and outs of that. There are protections to that. And so it's not like we're demonizing or saying like, oh, it's totally wrong to influence the way people think, because again, these medications, they do help people, and Botox can be very helpful in situations. It's just the way they're advertised. So that's the first link when I type in migraine treatment is Botox. So basically it's saying Botox is an option, and here's how effective it is based off Botox's website. The second ad is actually for another prescription medication. And then we get into what are these new drugs. They're the CGRP drugs. I've talked a little bit about those. When you turn on your TV, you will likely find an ad for Aimovig or Ajovy or Emgality. And so again, it's that same type of thing where they're trying to influence you, the consumer, rather than talk specifically to the providers, which they do as well. But all of this is sort of driving home this pharmaceutical-based intervention process that Western medicine is highly invested in. So because they're highly invested in it, it's kind of the cyclical thing where the research will then promote sort of a chemical-based change in the next medication and the next drug. And then, you know, in another 5 years, another latest and greatest drug will come out. And it's just sort of like this vicious cycle that patients get caught up in. And so I hear all the time, almost all my patients say, I'm tired of taking medications. I go to my neurologist and they basically just hear me out, but then they write another script and it feels like there's not another option. And so that's the same type of feeling I'm getting from the internet or what Google will provide. So after the ads, actually Mayo Clinic has the first link, and it says diagnosis and treatment for migraines. And this is pretty interesting. Like I said, I graduated from the Mayo Clinic. It's a wonderful institution. And so when I'm kind of analyzing these websites and going through this process, I'm really just trying to be helpful for you, the patient or the migraine sufferer that's trying to find a solution and is confused by all this information. And then I'm the guy telling you that, hey, there's another option other than medication. And why doesn't the Mayo Clinic talk about this? And why doesn't WebMD talk about this? So I don't want to be overly critical of the Mayo Clinic because they do such a great job. And I'm just this little guy in Colorado that is trying to make a difference. So, but first off, it says diagnosis, and it says MRI or CT scan. So an MRI is a way to diagnose tumors, strokes, bleeding in the brain. And then CT scans, it says, can diagnose tumors, infections, brain damage, brain bleeds as well. So the point here, and I'll go to WebMD as well, but basically both sites, Mayo Clinic, WebMD, will say pretty much straight up that doctors do not have a good way of diagnosing, or they don't know the underlying cause of migraines. And so they list these MRIs and CT scans because it's basically a way to rule out any other cause of head pain that is actually something that they can treat. So a brain bleed, an infection, a stroke, a tumor. Now those are things that are serious and need to be addressed if they're there. The problem is it's very unlikely that you, the patient, I'll just kind of describe you right now. You've been sitting at home searching online because you've been to the primary care doctor, you've been to the neurologist, you've probably already had these screens, and they haven't resulted in anything objective that can be treated. Now, that's most patients. So there are situations where head pain can indicate these types of things, and they need to be ruled out with MRI and CT scan. But for the lion majority of people, these MRIs and CTs are not going to come back with anything. So in that diagnosis process, essentially, if you have migraines, those MRIs and CTs are not really going to show anything. And then you're going to be left kind of down this road of medication and thinking, oh my gosh, there's no hope for me because no one can give me an answer. So WebMD actually says, doctors aren't totally sure what causes migraine headaches, but they think imbalances in certain brain chemicals may play a role. So let's just kind of dive into that. So outside of the MRI and CT scan that the Mayo Clinic recommends, WebMD says that doctors aren't totally sure. Now, to me as a provider, and I think for you as a patient as well, that should concern you. I think it concerns a lot of people when they say, okay, on the internet, WebMD, it's pulling all this data from research. It has doctors that I'm sure consult with WebMD or at least work for WebMD. And their most confident way of putting this is they say doctors aren't totally sure of what causes migraines. And then they say that they think imbalances in certain brain chemicals may play a role. So that's true. They've seen some potential like chemical imbalances, changes in the vascular structure, things like that. And then we get into this conversation of correlation versus causation. Is that causing the migraines? Is it just correlated with the migraines? Is that how the body responds when it's in chronic pain? Is that how the body responds when there's a referral pattern or hypersensitivities? And then the second statement is interesting. So it says the trigeminal nerve in your head runs your, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think it's trying to say it runs from your eyes and your mouth. It also helps you feel sensations in your face and is a major pathway for pain. Your levels of chemical called serotonin may fall at the start of a migraine, and this nerve can release chemicals called neurotransmitters that travel to your brain and cause pain. So that trigeminal nerve, them acknowledging the trigeminal nerve is a part of this, I would agree with that. I mean, that's everything that I teach as well, is that this trigeminal nerve and the pathway is a major part of how that pain signal is sent. And the trigeminal nerve is how we perceive any sensory input from our head, our face, kind of even our sinuses can be involved with that. And so the trigeminal nerve is a part of the problem. Again, it's correlated. I think what's actually driving the pain and what I've seen in clinic and the reason my patients get better is because it's a neck problem, and the neck and that sensory nerve from the neck meets up with that trigeminal nerve when it hits the brainstem and that nucleus, and then they send a common signal. So WebMD acknowledges that. The difference is they say that the serotonin levels may fall, so a lot of their prescription medications are affecting that serotonin level, where I would say let's go even further and address the actual source of pain rather than just the serotonin levels, because as we know, pharmaceuticals are kind of this global effect, more than just this local migraine problem. And that's where we get side effects from, because other systems in your body might not like that you're artificially affecting serotonin levels or whatever the prescription medication may be doing. All right, so that's kind of the diagnosis process that the internet has for us. Let's talk about treatment. So we've talked about this in a previous podcast as far as treatment is concerned. And so the Mayo Clinic goes through a list of medications that you can take. I won't go too much into those. If you want to hear me talk about medications, you can go to my previous podcast. I forget the title of it, but it's where I talk about medications and the different types of medications and if they're helpful or how to understand that. So I do want to jump down to lifestyle and home remedies that the Mayo Clinic has, and then WebMD. So the Mayo Clinic says try relaxation techniques, develop a sleeping and eating routine, drink plenty of fluids, keep a headache diary, and exercise regularly. So I agree 100% with all of these things. Relaxation techniques can be helpful because stress can play into not only those fluctuating hormones, which we see a correlation with migraines, but yeah, it can also reduce tension in your neck and in your shoulders. The second thing is sleeping and eating routine. So people that are not on a regular sleep schedule and are eating at random times of day, whether because they're busy or they just don't think about it, that can be a problem. And think of this as just your body will thank you if your overall health has improved. Your body will be able to fight off pain better when your health is improved as a whole than if it weren't. And so sleeping and eating are a big part of that. Drink plenty of fluids, so stay hydrated. Oftentimes people forget to drink water. That dehydration can be a headache or migraine trigger. Keep a headache diary. So this is important. I think for a lot of patients, it can be very helpful to know what your triggers are. Unfortunately, the Mayo Clinic, WebMD, and pretty much any neurologist, when they say avoid your triggers, basically that means avoid your triggers for the rest of your life if you find what that is. And so I take it from the approach of let's figure out what your body's sensitive to. Once we address the neck problem, which is the underlying source of pain, your body should be more resilient to that trigger. And hopefully we can get you to do that thing or eat that food or whatever it is again, in moderation, of course. Sometimes we can get there, sometimes we can't. Keeping a headache diary is very important though, but my approach is more of an empowerment where a lot of times it's this just, oh, if you found that you can't eat that food or you can't do that thing, then just avoid that for the rest of your life, or you're going to have a headache or a migraine. So headache diaries are helpful, but there's just that slight difference in how I view it compared to what most neurologists would recommend. So exercise regularly. This is also a very, very good thing. I encourage all my patients to at least walk several times a day. If you can get some resistance training or your heart rate up, I do recommend that as well. And again, it just goes back to overall health. Your body's going to be able to fight this sort of pain response. The joint that is restricted is probably going to be encouraged to move while you're moving, while you're doing that exercise. And then your body can kind of naturally release these endorphins that help mask pain or help. They actually kind of function similar to what these medications are doing. So if you can find a way to exercise regularly, you might be able to reduce your medication, your reliance on medication, without ever coming to see me. So find an exercise routine. I know for some migraine sufferers, exercise can be a trigger for them. So just figure out what works for you, but not moving at all is probably going to be more detrimental than it is helpful. And I've talked about that before, but just resting on the couch or, you know, staying in bed all day, even though that feels like what you need to do, and sometimes that is the only option, but when you feel better, when you feel okay, at least go on a walk, at least move a little bit, and build up a tolerance to that movement, get your heart rate up in some way, and that'll be helpful. And then they go into alternative medicine. So this is the category that, you know, if I made it onto this category, I'd be happy, but I don't even make it onto this category. So that's fine. I would like that to see that change in my career. I would actually like the Mayo Clinic and WebMD, as soon as you type in migraine treatment, it says, treat the neck. The neck is the most likely source of pain, and you need to see a physical therapist that specializes in headaches and migraines and can restore movement to the upper cervical spine because of this relationship to the trigeminal nerve, blah, blah, blah. See, they don't ask me, so I don't get the chance to tell them this stuff. But maybe if enough of you out there have your life changed by this process or start to think differently, then maybe someday WebMD and the Mayo Clinic will change their minds and we can make the list here. But what they say right now is acupuncture, biofeedback, cognitive behavioral therapy, and then herbs, vitamins, and minerals. So there has been some research to say that acupuncture can help. And even from an anecdotal perspective, I have patients that come in and acupuncture has been able to help to some extent. And I don't do acupuncture. I actually do a form of dry needling, which is using the same needles, but acupuncture is treating meridians and sort of this energy that it's different. There's sort of this mapping and they'll needle corresponding to where your pain is. And I'm not an acupuncturist, so to really get a proper explanation, you might need to visit an acupuncturist. Biofeedback, again, it's just that relaxation technique. And with chronic pain patients, oftentimes this is very helpful. There's actually a place at the Mayo Clinic where they do a great job of treating chronic pain. And a lot of what they do is just calm the brain down. They allow the brain to just sort of like relearn how to live life without focusing on pain. So biofeedback is a big part of that. Kind of the same as cognitive behavioral therapy. And then herbs, vitamins, and minerals. Again, just I would say that's probably hitting a lot on the sort of overall health of your body. But there are some specific vitamins and minerals that can be helpful. Maybe that's for another episode. So that's a deep dive into what the internet will tell you about headaches and migraines. Listen to my other podcasts if you're trying to figure out why I don't make the list. A lot of it, I believe, is this sort of cycle of pharmaceutical companies, advertising, doing more research on pharmaceuticals, promoting pharmaceuticals. And so that's why there's not really talk about this underlying neck problem, because if it's a neck problem and I can fix it, then no one makes any money. And you're better and you're feeling good. And I'm not saying that they have this sort of mentality of we're just going to get rich off of this, but there is an attraction to that. And there's an attraction to the next pill and there's an attraction to just writing another script. And so sometimes it's hard to kind of break that cycle. But that's what I feel like this podcast will do for you. It'll provide hope and then again, empower you to break free from a life of fear and dependence and thrive in everything you do. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Headache Doctor podcast. Feel free to rate and comment and recommend this podcast to anyone you know as it should be very, very helpful to them. Thanks for listening.